October 14th, 2021. Just went for the past week. We did a six-day sataha, the allowable six-day leave for to see Lungpa Viradamo, myself, Tangkantiko, to visit Tisarana Forest Monastery. And this is something that we do. We go and visit teachers and we express our gratitude, pay respects to teachers, but also we get supported by them. So I definitely have been supported by Lungpa Viradamo, so a lot of gratitude for him. One of his teachings that has stuck with me is that when you are grateful for, say, the practice, that means it's working. If you have gratitude, that means the practice is working, because if it wasn't working, you wouldn't have gratitude for it. So if you have gratitude for it, that means it's working. So he said he feels very grateful for the practice, and I also feel very grateful for Lungpa Viradamo. His advice has, over the years, has worked for me. And I remember one time being at this Buddhist monastic gathering at the Land of Medicine Buddha outside of Santa Cruz, and I believe I had two vasas, or it was during my second vasa, possibly, and Lungpa Viradamo was there, and of course Ajahn Pasano, Ajahn Amaru, Ajahn Sudanto, and I think they invited me to go along with them. And it's this, I believe there's a photo of this gathering up in Casa Serena. It's a very colorful monastic photo. And Lungpa Viradamo also had this photo up in his kuti, same photo. But I remember him asking me, oh, how's it going? Because he knew me as a Anagarika when I started out here. And he said, oh, how's it going? How's the training working out for you? I said, well, I don't think it's going very well. I said, you know, at first I would have these really amazing meditations, and sometimes it would be like, yeah, really blissful, and also sometimes it'd be really hellish. It'd be really bad sometimes too. But now it's just kind of ordinary. And he said, oh, that's good. You're more peaceful. Because at first we're addicted to the ups and downs, what we call spiritual athleticism. So we're addicted to the ups and downs of practice, but then it's actually good when it evens out and it gets more peaceful, so you don't have as many ups and downs, and it's actually more sustainable, more consistent. So there's a bit more equanimity. Something I've been thinking about that I thought I would touch on this evening also is the idea that what we already have everything we need to practice, or we already have all the capabilities that we need. The Dhamma is always apparent here and now, so it's always with us, it's always in front of us. And I was thought about this because it's really our perception is hiding it from us. Our perceptions and our proliferations and our preconceived notions and ideas about the Dhamma and about practice is hiding it from us. It's hiding something which is right in front of us and which is obvious, but it's actually too close. It's almost like it's too close to our face. We're always looking past it. We can't see it. So I was reminded of this when I was up at the workshop for a little bit this afternoon and decided I would take on my practice of taking the dirtiest place and making it the cleanest place, and actually trying to take some stuff out, just slowly taking stuff out of this one lumber bay where we have some PVC pipes and pieces of metal and pieces of copper and cuts of plywood, and a lot of leaves and dust has blown in there over the past year, so I thought I would just take everything out slowly and start working away at it, sweeping it up. And there's these bays where we have stuff that can stand up. And So part of my intention in starting to clean out these areas in the workshop is something else I do is reorganize it completely from time to time, so nobody can find where anything is. You have to figure it out, have to relearn it, keep everybody on their toes, keep that mindfulness going so we don't run on automatic. And I was very impressed with the way Ajahn Pavaro organized the workshop at Tisarana. So it's like, oh, this French cleats, that's a revelation in terms of getting everything up on the wall, and it's customizable. You can take things and move it from one place to another if it's not in the right spot, or it's so much more versatile. And that, okay, yeah, I've never seen this before. I'm gonna do this in the workshop. It is gonna be super great. And so I was thinking about these French cleats and how it's like a 45-degree angle, and you put it against the wall and you can just hang things on it, and it's really easy, and you can slide them around and take it off whenever you want, and it's not permanently attached to the wall. And so as I was thinking about how I was going to do these, first I was thinking, well, when I clean out this lumber bay, the first thing I'll do is I'll put some of these French cleats up on that wall and hang some ladders there or something. And so I was taking everything out and I was looking at what was there already, and there it was, French cleats, installed by Tan Kemiko in 2011. And they were right in front of me the whole time, and I never noticed them. I never knew what they were. I never knew how. So there it was. And so these lumber bays were actually floating off of the ground. They're not attached to the ground in any way. They're actually hanging up on these French cleats, and they can actually be taken off because it's already there. So I thought, well, okay, now I don't need to do it on that wall because it already has what I wanted to do. And I thought I wanted to change it, but it was already right, it was right in front of me. I had no idea. Now that it was pointed out to me what they were, then I could recognize them, or I could know how they're used and how they work. So I just thought, yeah, there was something right in front of me for the past, however long the workshop's been there, so the past 10 years, and didn't really realize it, didn't see it. I've cleaned it out multiple times, didn't really realize what was there. So that was kind of interesting to just see that and think that, yeah, everything is like that, and the Dhamma is like that, where because of there's things obscuring it, there's a mess in front of it, and also it hasn't been pointed out to us what it is and what we're supposed to be looking for, or we haven't really got our minds around it yet. So it's right in front of us, but we're looking past it, or we just see our own ideas. So like when I had my ideas about the French cleats to put them on that wall, because I was thinking about them, I didn't see that they were already there. So sometimes because we overthink the Dhamma, we don't see that it's already there right in front of us. All we see is our thoughts about it. We don't see the reality, the Pachupana Dhamma, the here and now Dhamma that's right in front of us all the time. So it's ordinary, it's natural. It's right in front of us. So what can we do to actualize that, or to see that more clearly, to work with that? And when we say the Dhamma is right in front of us, it means the Dhamma of our experience of just having a body and mind and having the six sense bases, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, mind as the sixth sense base. And just using that, using our experience for contemplation, for recollection, for cultivating mindfulness. Had a lot of good Dhamma discussions at Tisarana. And there's a monk there who's fluent in Sanskrit and Pali. And so it's quite fun to talk to him about etymology. And like really fluent in Sanskrit and Pali, not just not just thinks he's fluent, he actually is fluent and can actually really knows the etymology, the history of these words and where they come from, also has, because he's Indian, he has the background of having grown up with these languages and having a lot of fun just talking about different words and different origins of words, Pali words, Sanskrit words. So one of the words is sampajanya. So we get questions sometimes, well, what is sampajanya? Our teachers say sati sampajanya. We're supposed to be cultivating sati sampajanya. So sampajanya is like the third level of a word, pajanati. Actually, janati starts at janati, is just to know or to see, to something is present for us. So to know something, so that's janati. You add a little bit onto that, so you get pajanati, and that's to understand. To understand dukkha, like as in the Four Noble Truths, dukkha is to be understood. Pajanati, and then you get sampajanati, which is to make into one's being, to actualize. Sampajanati. So that's the root of like sampajanya. Sampajanya is to, when we have sati sampajanya, sati is the mindfulness, and then sampajanya is the clear comprehension, but it's an actualization of mindfulness. Mindfulness, establishing mindfulness, is like the act of remembering to have sampajanya, or remembering to have that full self-awareness. So, and this is also like one of the qualities of the Dhamma, which is opanayiko, or to be brought inward, to be internalized, actualized. It's to be, or I guess you could say, it is us. It applies to us. It's not something outside of ourselves. And these Dhamma truths of anicca, dukkha, anatta, of impermanence, translated as impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self. You know, how do we apply that? How do we actualize that? So we come back to these contemplations of say like the contemplation of aging, the contemplation of death. That's part of us. That's part of our human experience. Sometimes we might hear a teaching, this is quite a popular one, just act natural, just be yourself, just act natural. And that's really hard to do, actually. Just be yourself, just act natural. You know, why can't you just be yourself? You know, have you ever had somebody walk up to you and say, why can't you just be yourself? You know, think, well, okay, well, maybe you can show me how to be myself. Or just act natural. Just don't worry about it. Just act natural. I found that so difficult to do. Because these things are not self. So the personality is not self. The body is not me, not mine, according to the Buddha's teachings. So how do we actually work with that? How do we actualize that? Yeah. I think even the people who we might think are the most hip and the coolest, even they are going to have awkward moments where they aren't, like, quote-unquote, acting natural. So everybody's in the same boat. Yeah. This is the same for everybody. Everybody has their personality they have to work with, and everybody has their tendencies, and we all have our quirks, and that's what makes us human. That's what makes us human. So if we were all just, going on automatic, or like we were all the same, if we were all the same, that would be really strange. If we were all exactly the same. So in terms of if we want to act natural or be ourselves, then how do we actually do that? So with Dhamma practice, with actualizing the Dhamma, which is the truth of the way things are, and then bringing it inward, these contemplations. And well, one of the cool things about being a monk is that we don't really have to be anybody. We don't really have to be anybody. We don't need to prop up like a persona. So our duty is to practice, hold the Vinaya, and we don't really have to do anything special or be anybody special. We just need to hold these precepts and do our daily routine, get on with things. We do need to learn how to communicate with each other, and there might be times when we need to express ourselves. But for the most part, we don't really need to achieve anything special or do anything special, like out in the world where we might need to achieve some, do some, you know, be really, really skilled at something or achieve some sort of feat in order to feel more confident about ourselves. That's not to say there aren't, you know, confidence building things we can do as bhikkhus. We can learn the Patimokkha, feel confident about that, or we can learn a craft. One of the things Longpo Viradamo is learning right now is weaving. He got given a weaving loom made in Canada, very, very beautiful maple weaving loom, and he's learning how to weave. So we can learn a craft and we can feel confident about that, but none of these things are a refuge. So I remember being asked, really, the Dhamma is the refuge. So being asked one time a few years back, I think I was just over 10 vasas or something. And at tea time, somebody asking, you know, what, as a senior monk, like, how do you sustain yourself? Like, what do you need? What do you need to do? Or how do you need to sustain yourself to keep doing this, to keep doing it long term? And I was about to answer, and then there was somebody else with me who was like, well, you have to learn a craft or do something. You know, you got to kind of like get good at something or, you know, do these confidence building things. But I had the thought, I wouldn't have answered like that, because it's really the Dhamma, to stay inspired by Dhamma. The Dhamma is the only thing that can really help us. So no matter how much we learn or the tasks we are good at, then those things are helpful and can be great to be able to do, say, woodworking and be able to make shrines and do things where we make things useful for the monastery. We can do the cabinets and the kutis or whatever. But if we're not doing it for Dhamma, then it's no different than just being a carpenter out in the world. It's no different than just doing a worldly task. So we have to find ways to, how do we apply this to Dhamma? So like we might feel compelled to build something amazing in order to feel confident about ourselves, in order to feel like worthy or that we can convince ourselves we're useful or good at something. And that's fine, but that's an impermanent or an uncertain, unstable form of confidence. So really where the confidence for a monastic comes from is that confidence in the Dhamma, and also the confidence in not self, not me, not mine, not having to be anyone, not having to be anything. Yeah, that's what really starts to build the confidence, the more stable form of confidence. If we're seeking confidence through external things, through praise or through anything worldly, if we're seeking something external, or we might want to make something or build something that just people find really amazing, and that's a very unstable form of confidence. And then we just have to do something else to get that same hit again. And then we're left at square one. So using the Dhamma for confidence, this is where the meditation, the contemplations, the patient endurance, the parami. So when we use work or tasks that we do around the monastery as dana parami, then we make it Dhamma. It's no longer just about doing a task, but it's bringing it back to Dhamma and using it as a Dhamma puja, using it as a continuation of the sasana, the Buddha sasana. So for that reason, like for myself, I've never been able to do things like work unless it's something that's going to be helpful for the monastery or some sort of something that's going to be practical or usable, but not just seeking work for the sake of work or activity for the sake of activity. Super important to bring it back to Dhamma. And that way we just do what needs to be done as well. We don't just do what we like. If we just do what we like, we haven't even started practicing. That's Lungpur Cha saying, if we're just finding ways to do what we like, we aren't really practicing. So the practice is actually doing what needs to be done. Sometimes what needs to be done might be something we like. Sometimes it might not be. Brought up in previous talk about building the water system in this monastery. And I didn't do plumbing because I like plumbing. It's like, okay, you're the water monk. And okay, glue these pipes together and do that for the next 3 years. And it's just, I didn't have strong aspirations to become a plumber when I entered the monastery, but it was just what needed to be done, so it was practice. It's like, okay, well, this is what's needed. The monastery needs water. Everybody needs water. It is helpful for people to have water, and it's not helpful when you turn on the water tap and no water comes out. So that way I found some joy in it and was able to gain some confidence by doing those activities, but it certainly wasn't because I liked plumbing. And if I was to leave the monastery and disrobe, I could go and be a professional plumber if I wanted to. I could say on my resume, yeah, I can fix almost any water pipe, and I can hook up toilets and sinks so they don't leak. And I would make money, and I would always be busy, but it wouldn't be Dhamma. It wouldn't be Dana. It wouldn't be Dana Parami. So it would be miserable. It would be misery. Misery Parami. So no desire to do that. So what we do in the monastery is not about the skills in and of themselves, but when we put our heart into it, we can take delight in them. But that delight doesn't come from the skill itself. It comes from making it Dhamma. That's a very crucial point. When we do that, when we relate to skills in that way, and I'm sure this is how Lungpur Viradhamo is relating to skills. That's why I've learned so much from him. Because it's not about woodworking or weaving or plumbing, but it's about the Dhamma aspect or the Dana aspect of it. So very important to get our minds around that. And when we do relate to things in that way, then when we come to meditate, we relate to the meditation in the same way. And the meditation is just, we can put our heart into the meditation and bring that and make that into Dhamma also. We make the meditation into Dhamma. We can relate to the meditation as not Dhamma or as Dhamma. So if we relate to the meditation as Dhamma, then it's relating to it as anicca, dukkha, anatta, as impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self, when we meditate. But if we relate to the meditation as in terms of, I don't have yet this yet, and I need to get this, I need to attain this, I need to attain that, that's not quite bringing it to Dhamma. It's going to be much more peaceful if we if we just let go of all that. It's very subtle stuff, though. Something Lungpur Liam would talk about is Dhamma and non-Dhamma, where there is like a right view, but there's also a wrong way of viewing things. But it's very, very subtle. So it's the words in Pali are Dhamma and Atamma. So there's Dhamma and non-Dhamma. To be able to discriminate between those two is very, very difficult. It takes a sampajanya, that full awareness, the full comprehension. But there's little markers, maybe ways we can see how to do that. One way to see that is say if we are engaging in some sort of activity through the day and we come to meditate, are we able to put our heart into the meditation, or are we just, is our mind going back to wanting to engage in that activity again? That would show that we were engaging in the activity just for the sake of the activity, not making it Dhamma. Or on the flip side, if we engage in a certain activity and then we come to meditate and then we're engaging in the meditation, then we've made it Dhamma because what we're doing is we're engaging and we're putting our heart into whatever we're doing. It's a very subtle difference, and I can't say I am able to do that all the time myself, even after all these years, but that is a way to gauge, like, how much am I bringing this to Dhamma and how much am I just attached to doing that activity. Because if we're doing it with non-attachment, we're going to be in the moment. There's going to be sati sampajanya, and we're going to be inhabiting ourselves in the moment, in our body and mind, and we're going to, there will be a sense of delight. There will be a sense of delight that builds up. And then that delight will be there whether we're sitting or whether we're doing something, because we're putting our heart into whatever we're doing. So it's possible to delight in the meditation, and it's possible to delight in cutting a PVC pipe. Just for putting our heart into it. Just, okay, this is what needs to be done right now. Meditating right now. Now is the time for meditation. Now is the time for sitting meditation. Now is the time for walking meditation. Now is the time for fixing a water pipe. All these things are just ordinary. Oh, he's fixing water pipes. That's not practice. He's not practicing. We can get really critical like that. I've had that before. But it's not true. Because the Dhamma is always right in front of us. But we're missing it. If we think, oh, I'm fixing a water pipe, I'm not practicing, then we're not seeing what's right in front of us. The mind is, the body and the mind are there in that moment when we're doing that activity. Okay, right now I'm meditating, I'm practicing, I'm really practicing. But we might not be. So if we're raising ourselves up above others because we're meditating, because we're in the posture of meditation, so that's not Dhamma. So it's subtle stuff, but it's good to get our mind around this. You know, what is the apparent here and now Dhamma? What is the internalizing Dhamma? You know, what is sati sampajanya? You know, how do we fully inhabit this body and this mind in the present? So I don't want to go on for too long, but I had a nice time at Tisarana, and these are some ideas and thoughts that are percolating, so I'll offer that for reflection.